From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made 2 weeks ago when New York State lawmakers passed a $177 billion budget. It requires paid sick leave, scales back cash bail reforms, and it addressed education funding. But during this pandemic, during this crisis, Governor Cuomo has said that states have been shortchanged by the federal government. As a result, this budget reflects a growing economic crash, and there is pain to go around. In fact, just about 20 minutes ago, Governor Cuomo, in part of his extended rant against the White House and President Trump, he said airlines deserve a bailout, but not states. Come on, big business gets a bailout, but not states. That's what the governor is challenging the federal government. But the reality is, for now, states have to deal with what they have. So it's a challenge for states to balance this budget. It's a challenge for schools. And by the way, it might be a challenge for you. If you've tried to sign up for unemployment assistance, have you gotten through? Have you received the help you need? For a while, it was tough. The state says they've tried to fix those issues as well. So let's talk to a couple members of the New York State Assembly, one Democrat, one Republican, discussing the budget and the state's priorities, and I will welcome them now. Assemblyman Harry Bronson, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Evan. Thanks for having me on.
And Assemblyman Mark Johns, welcome. How are you, sir?
Yeah, good afternoon, Evan. Hey, Harry.
Well.
Hello, Mark.
So, Assemblyman Bronson, I assume you just heard the governor. That was as much heat as he's been willing to show the White House. I understand the governor's frustration with the White House because in the absence of federal leadership, states are essentially on their own. And the governor's saying we can't find a way out of this pre-vaccine without federal leadership on supply chains, testing. And you're telling the states they're on their own, probably, by the way, because the White House doesn't want to take responsibility for either a tanked economy or more dead Americans. I mean, that's just the reality right now if you're not willing to lead. And so I understand the governor's frustration. But boy, that was one extended rant. And my concern there is, Harry, when he says things like, hey, my only mistake, President Trump, was trusting your projections, I'll never make that mistake again, that kind of flippancy I don't think helps, because what that says to the public is, well, the models were wrong. And the models haven't been wrong. We've always seen the worst case as the kind of thing that happens with inaction. We've avoided that because of our hard work. And I'm a little concerned that the governor just did a little damage to the public confidence in modeling there. I wonder how you feel about what you just heard.
Yeah, I think that our modeling has been pretty good. You know, look, New York may be the epicenter of the coronavirus pandemic here in the United States. And we've shown here in New York what makes the Empire State so great. And it is that we are responsive. We are responding to the needs of the citizens. We are taking measures that are necessary. We've quarantined, we've social distanced, we've taken extreme but necessary measures to protect all of our families and certainly the most vulnerable. Our focus needs to continue in that area, and we need to continue to see how we can respond to this in a way of making sure that our healthcare providers have the equipment they need, that our citizens have the information they need. The governor's briefings each day, I think, are instrumental in making sure people have information. But you're correct. We also have to rely on the federal government, and they have had several stimulus packages, but those stimulus packages need to focus on the families. They need to have money going directly to the families, and it needs to also focus on local governments as well as at the state level. Look, you know, this year, one of the last bills we passed in the as we were doing the budget bills was a measure to authorize the governor to borrow short-term borrowing of upwards of $11 billion. That's to address the fact that our businesses are shut down, so there aren't sales tax revenues coming in. We've delayed the income tax deadline from Wednesday of this week, April 15th, to July 15th, which means we're not getting a lot of those income tax returns coming in. And that has created a cash flow problem for the state. And, you know, we can't get out of this from a financial standpoint unless the federal government participates and helps with another stimulus package.
All right. We're going to follow up on a lot of these details. Let me bring Mark here. Assemblyman Johns, what do you make of what the governor just had to say about his frustration with the White House and where New York State, among others, goes next?
Well, look, I try to stay as best I can out of political bickering like this. I don't think it's very adult-like to be carrying on that way. You know, you can put a lot of blame on New York State, New Jersey, and Connecticut. They all have Democratic governors. And then take a look at California, Washington, and Oregon also have Democratic governors, and they get a lot of praise for doing a better job. So, you know, I prefer not to be too involved with partisan politics if I can help it.
Fair enough. All right. Assemblyman Bronson, so you've kind of set the stage for a little conversation. Before we get into specific budget items, I want to talk sort of generally about where we go in this crisis and, you know, where New York State has to go given what the federal government's doing. So when Governor Cuomo says, you know, the airlines need a bailout but not states, and earlier this week he said the federal government should have provided $500 billion for states, otherwise you're going to have a recession become a depression, and the federal government has failed in that. I will also point out, Assemblyman Bronson, that Congressman Joe Morelli told us on this program he understands the governor's frustration, but he's, you know, maybe ignoring some of the parts of the $2.2 trillion coronavirus relief package that were aimed at states and did give the states a little bit more flexibility. So it's a little more nuanced than that. Who do you think is right here, Harry?
Well, I think they're both right in part. So here, this is where we stand as a state. So the good news is we ended up the last fiscal year in the black. We had more revenues that came in during last fiscal year than we had projected, to the tune of around $430 million more. So those funds will go into the rainy day reserve fund, which we're going to tap into immediately, but they'll go there first. That being said, with businesses shut down, we're not getting sales tax revenues. With the income tax filing deadline, July 15th, we're not getting those income tax revenues coming in. So there's a cash flow problem. On the flip side of it, we have expended significant money on emergency relief, whether it's personal protection equipment, whether it's ventilators or otherwise. We've spent close to $1 billion in that area. And we have May and June coming up. And May and June are our big payout months in the state, where we spend billions of dollars, $9 billion over the next couple of months going to the various 700 school districts across the state. We have a very serious problem here. So that needs to be addressed at the federal level. On the when Congressman Morelli mentions, you know, there's been a $2.2 trillion stimulus packages that have been put out there, that's correct, and that's good. That stimulus has helped out. Some of that money is going directly in the pockets of individuals. Some of that money is helping our unemployment insurance system. As most people know, the unemployment insurance system is both a federal and a state program. That has been expanded to include those folks in the gig economy and self-employed independent contractors. Through the pandemic unemployment assistance program, that's adding pressures onto the state as well. So, it's from both ends. Both are making accurate statements, I think. But the reality is, at the state level, look, the state can't make money. We can't print money. So it has to come in through our revenue sources. And when those are depleted under the current climate, we have nowhere to look other than the federal government.
So I take the point, and I know you've got a good relationship with Congressman Morelli. And he wasn't saying, by the way, that the federal government can't do more. He was just saying it might be a little bit more nuanced than the feds have done zip for the state. So when you meet with him, when you talk to him, what do you tell him specifically? Okay, the next step we need from you is we need dollars, we just need fungible cash. What do you need?
Yeah, the three areas that I've been talking about, and number one, we need additional dollars for housing. Number two, we need additional dollars for education. And number three, we need a stimulus package that will help out the states and the local governments.
Okay. Assemblyman Johns, what do you make of the claim that the federal government has a responsibility to the states, obviously New York State included, in big numbers because of this crisis, because of the flexibility the federal government has to provide relief?
Well, as a fiscal conservative, I saw this coming. Not the coronavirus, but, you know, there's going to be disasters, there's going to be downturns. And by the way, Chuck Schumer, when he came out and announced all this money that was coming to the states and to our state, Schumer and the governor got into an argument, you remember, a few weeks ago, and the governor was accusing Schumer of not bringing in enough. And he said, well, it's a down payment. I'm going to bring in more. So, you know, there's some bickering going back and forth. But this is some background. From 95 to 2000 in New York State, they had surpluses of upwards of $1 billion a year. Did we save any of that? Not a one. We spent it all. And then in the about 2002 to 2006, we had surpluses in New York. Did we save any of it? Nope. We got all kinds of settlement money from tobacco and other settlements. Did we save it? Nope. We spent it. So you know that a crisis is coming. They're telling people, save money in your IRAs. Be conservative. Save money for a rainy day. Save money for retirement. And guess what? Albany and Washington, there are no fiscal conservatives in either place. They spend all the money, and the luxury that they have in the federal government in Washington is they can print more. It's a recipe for disaster. And then something like the coronavirus hits, and you say, whoa, wouldn't it have been a smart move to have saved some money? We didn't do it.
Okay, so we didn't, or we didn't do it to your satisfaction. But where we are now, Assemblyman Johns, what do we do now?
Well, the federal government is going to have to bail out the states, but it's going to go on the, you know, it's going to go on the national debt, and we are going to wind up paying it back or printing the money and have ridiculous inflation.
All right, Assemblyman Harry Bronson, Assemblyman Mark Johns, with us. Listeners, if you've got questions or comments for these elected state leaders, you can call the program toll-free. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. Assemblyman Bronson, you have had a lot to say in recent months and, frankly, the last several years about the crisis in Rochester City schools. And now Superintendent Dade is sort of grappling with the board and some members in the community about the state of that budget and dealing with kind of a crisis budget here. What do you see in terms of the state's responsibility there, and has the state done the best it can for the RCSD this year?
I think I have a mixed response there. We did a good job in coming up with the $35 million gap funding to close the current fiscal year for the school district. They absolutely needed that money to pay their bills in May, and we were successful in doing that. In connection with that, we came up with a monitoring program where a monitor will be in place in connection with oversight and accountability of the school district in the areas of fiscal oversight as well as academic oversight, and making sure that the implementation of the recommendations out of the Distinguished Educators Report are met. That monitor will be appointed by the Commissioner of the State Education Department and will be required to hold three general public hearings on topics that would allow parents and students and others to have a voice. And then once the financial plan is put in place, to hold an additional public hearing on the financial plan. And when the academic plan is put in place, to have a hearing on the academic plan. So, you know, this is a positive step forward. It will maintain local control over our school district, will encourage and facilitate the voices of our parents and our students to weigh in on the school district, and we will have oversight where the monitor will be required to report back to the State Education Department and the commissioner, as well as report back to the Assembly, the Senate, and the governor's office. So all of that's positive. The negative aspect of the budget is that not only for the Rochester City School District, but all of the roughly 700 school districts across the state, Foundation aid was held at flat funding over last year. So what the superintendent had done back in March, I think it was March 26th, when he proposed his budget, I talked to him before he proposed his budget. He took a conservative fiscal approach, which was appropriate, but he estimated, rightfully so, the increase that the governor had proposed in his executive budget with an additional $4.5 million increase. That would be the historical increase of a legislative ad. The COVID virus hit, the pandemic hit. Neither of those increases, the executive's increase nor the traditional legislative increase, happened. So that was roughly a $17 million shortfall, an additional shortfall in reimbursement on food meals that the school district is obligated to supply. And so that's why we're facing now the shortfall, and the superintendent is in the unfortunate situation of being required to find additional expense cuts. So positive stuff came out of the budget, but at the same time, given the COVID situation, we were not able to increase funding for any of the school districts. And that has created a difficult situation for Rochester City School.
And I understand, Harry, that you don't want to be in this position, but the fact of the matter is we're in a crisis. Do you think that the state did the best it could under the circumstances for the RCSD then?
I think we did a darn good job in the circumstances. I wish we had done more and increased that funding. You know, budgets are a statement of priorities, and education is certainly one of my highest priorities, and I think we should have had increases for the Rochester City School District as well as the other school districts across the state.
Assemblyman Johns, what do you think?
Well, we would have had even larger cuts. Some of the money, I think Harry would know, was it Harry, was it $1.1 or $1.3 billion that came in from the feds? So actually, there was a cut at the state level for foundation aid, but it was made up for by some of the money coming in from the feds. I think $1.1 billion, I believe it was. So it could have been worse, but we got bailed out somewhat. And we'll see, I guess, what the future holds. But it could have been even worse. And, you know, I always vote for increased school aid. You know, you either pay it at one level or you pay it at the other level. Property taxes, especially school property taxes, are the highest in the country right here in New York. So the less aid you give to the school districts, the higher your property tax is going to be.
We're talking to two members of the New York State Assembly, Harry Bronson and Mark Johns, and I've got some questions coming in via email, on social media. Phone lines open if you want to call and raise concerns on really any state business you want right now. 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. Connections at WXXI.org is the email. I don't want to get too sidetracked on the governor versus the president that happened last hour. I'll just read one email. Edward says, Evan, regarding your thoughts on Governor Cuomo's comments about President Trump, I respectfully disagree with your concerns. I'm 1 month younger than the governor. He attended the best Catholic high school in Queens, and I attended the best Catholic high school in Brooklyn. Trump and Cuomo are two guys from Queens, and this is how guys from Queens and Brooklyn debate. I'm sure Cuomo's rant was well received by New York City. I even view Cuomo's rant in a positive light, and I'm someone who was angry that Trump fired Preet Bharara before Preet could get an indictment of Cuomo. So that's from Edward. Edward, all I'm going to say is this. The governor's frustration with the White House is predictable and understandable on the merits. The White House has not led and shown the kind of national cohesive leadership that gives us a plan. We don't have a plan. The plan that was released by the White House yesterday was, governors, you decide. You know, you figure this out. By the way, you figure out testing too, which states don't really have the power to do. There hasn't been a cohesive national plan ever on a plan forward here. So do I understand, whether you're Mike DeWine, a Republican in Ohio, whether you're Andrew Cuomo, a Democrat in New York, do I understand governor's frustration? Absolutely. Do I understand why the governor would want to fire back a little? Absolutely. What I didn't like was when he said, well, hey, if you think we ordered too much equipment, it was your model, and if your model was wrong, fire your team. That undermines public confidence in the models, because the models are not a fixed prediction of what's going to happen. They are a range of possibilities, including the worst case, that we can avoid with action. We have avoided the worst with action so far, which means the models have been very helpful to us. And I'm just not a fan of undermining public understanding or confidence in the models. I get the rhetorical point he was making. I do.
Yeah, but Evan, I'll tell you what. Edwards from New York City, from Queens or Brooklyn, you know, Trump is a lifelong Democrat from New York City. So is Cuomo. This is how they fight down there. Harry and I are way above that. So, you know, we don't act and talk like that, you know. And we're on a higher plane. Isn't that right, Harry? So
sure,
we insult each other in a nice way. But you know something? Trump, with his big mouth and his tweeting, Trump has really actually openly talked about the stuff that in politics used to be talked about behind the scenes. And, you know, Trump, he's got a lot of flaws. You know, I mean, we spent a whole show talking about him. But the way Trump plays politics, he doesn't understand that in this business, you try to get people to like you. And you know what? I know Harry's in that business, and I am. So this bickering back and forth, a couple of kids in the schoolyard fighting back and forth, I don't see it doing anybody any good. And, you know, we're all in this together. We're all dependent on the Chinese. You know, the governor went with a pretty long rant about how everything is made in China. So the virus emanated from the Wuhan province, but guess what? The medicine and the parts and components of everything we need to fight it has to come from China. You know, I mean, this goes back to, you know, I was telling Megan Mack there, you go back to the company store, the back in the days, well, you guys are too young, but back in the old days, the reason why we had a large rise in unions, if you were a coal miner, you didn't get paid cash. You got tokens that you could only spend at the company store. I mean, think about it. That's what the Chinese have got over our heads. We have to get respirators and masks and PPEs and everything else from the Chinese. It doesn't make you very independent, and it doesn't help you in a crisis.
Well, let me ask Assemblyman Bronson about that and put a final remark on this, because I've got emails from people saying, Evan, you missed the governor's sarcasm. He was making fun of Trump for not understanding his own models, et cetera. I get that. I really do. I understand the rhetorical points. All I'm saying is this. If you were listening to the governor and you understood he was being sarcastic when he said, if your models were wrong, blame your team, not mine, the models weren't wrong just because the outcome wasn't the worst case. And if you're saying, well, I understand that, understand that there are millions of Americans right now who want to reopen yesterday because not enough people died based on those early models. So we've got to be very careful with public understanding of math, models, and projections here, because it's not like predicting the weather. This is not saying what you think will happen. It's saying what could happen based on certain actions. And that is different. And we got to be very careful with undermining that. But I understand, listeners, trust me, I understand the governor's frustration. I do. And I understand that a lot of listeners think it's about time someone stood up to the White House. I get that, too, because we haven't seen leadership on a national level during a crisis. But let me turn back to Mark's point. So Harry Bronson, your colleague Mark Johns is saying everything is made in China. The reagents, everything that we seem to need, whether it's ventilator parts or whether it's chemical reagents, whether it's swabs, testing, we have to get some of the components through China. And if that's always going to be the case, then we're always going to be in even greater trouble in a crisis. And it sounds like Mark's saying that one of the lessons needs to be going forward. We got to change. We got to make more stuff here, even if that means changing trade policy, economic policy. Do you agree, Harry?
Well, but, you know, I think that's putting us way in advance of where we need to be right now. What we need to be focusing on right now is relying on the science, which I think is what you're saying, Evan, and those models. So let's get back to where, you know, the governor's the majority of his press conference, I didn't watch it today, but in the past has always been about looking at the science, listening to the healthcare providers, listening to folks who are knowledgeable in this area, and what steps do we need to take to keep you know, to get a control over the pandemic and to keep control over this pandemic. And how do we make decisions, whether it is where we put our healthcare resources, where we put assistance dollars, how do we help our families, and how do we help people get back to work? So my focus right now is going to be continuing to move us forward in a way based on the science and the medicine, in a way that's going to keep families safe, and at the same time, when it's ready, to make those steps to reopen the economy, reopen businesses, reopen activity, but to do it in a safe manner. Where we get supplies in the future, I'll have that conversation, but I'm not going to have that conversation until we get through this pandemic and get through the transition to reopen society and reopen our economy.
Well, a number of listeners have asked if you will both weigh in on whether in a crisis we are seeing that we need a different healthcare system, that relying on employment for healthcare, especially when millions of people are losing their jobs, is a bad system. Harry Brownson, you first.
Sure. I mean, your listeners are probably well aware I am a strong advocate for a single-payer health system. Historically, the only way we came into having an employer-funded healthcare system was because there was a time in our economy where employees were of a shortage, and businesses had to come up with creative ways to encourage people to work for them versus their competitors. There was no huge analysis that went into that. We kind of fell into it. We're the only industrialized country that does it. I strongly believe that we should have a single payer healthcare system at the federal level for sure. That being said, I'm not sure that if we had that system, it would have made a big difference in our overall response, because in that you're really talking about the delivery of the services and not necessarily just the funding of the services. So, I think that I still am a proponent and will continue to fight and advocate for a single-payer system. But that being said, I think that other countries who have that kind of a system or something similar to it are facing the same kind of hurdles that we're facing and making sure that we provide the medical services that we need to, while we're also practicing social distancing and protective measures.
Assemblyman Johns.
Right. Well, I guess Harry and Joe Morelli have differences of opinion, because I know Joe is not for a single-payer system. But Harry's right. We're in this situation. Europe has got a bigger problem than us. They have a lot more socialized insurance over there, and they got a big problem. And thank God that we have private companies over here that are looking for vaccines and other remedies and medicine. We have them all working at different levels to try and attain what really the private sector will come up with to hopefully remedy this situation that we're in now. And a lot of different companies, you know what, there's problems I have with big pharma. I mean, we give them a lot of subsidies. We give billions of dollars to colleges and universities. They go out there and do some of the research and development, and then the big pharmaceutical companies wind up making a lot of money, with the patents for that medicine. I'll give you an example. Why would a prescription in the United States, in New York, cost $100 and it only cost $10 in Canada or Mexico or England or Europe? So, you know, there are problems, but I'm glad that we have the free enterprise here to resolve those problems. But I know that Bernie Sanders and Trump talked about big pharmaceuticals, and obviously they're one of the biggest lobbyists. But you know what? We need to have a system that says, look, whatever you're selling the drugs for in this country, you're going to sell them for the same price in the other countries. We're not going to rip off the American people and the American consumers, knowing that medicine is one of the highest cost of health care. And at the same time that you get tax breaks and subsidies, you're going to charge Americans more while you charge Europeans and others less.
All right, listeners, if you've got questions or comments, we're going to take your phone calls after our only break of the hour with Assemblyman Mark Johns and Assemblyman Harry Brownson talking about the New York State budget, priorities, and a path forward now. Let's get that break and back to your calls next. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, why do polls show that younger adults in this country favor socialism over capitalism? It could be because if you're an older millennial, you graduated college and then the financial crash hit, and now the pandemic hits and we're in another recession headed for a possible depression. Millennials, jobs, their outlook on the economy, and more on Monday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. To your phone calls we go. And let me get, oh boy, there's a lot of people on the phone. Susan in Rochester. Hi. Is first. Hi, Susan, go ahead.
So I was just wanted to compliment the conversation that's going on about previously about with Cuomo and the testing. Testing is a diagnostic, and diagnostic is extremely expensive, so people want their hands off of it. But it's very important. It's if you value human life, we want the test. We want everybody to be tested. We want people tested. You know, so there is a company right now that's working on like a home test. I don't know how that's going to work because, for example, the antibodies test, you need to be up to a certain level. If you don't have that level, you could get a reoccurrence. And that second time with this virus is nasty. With regards to vaccines, they've been working on vaccines for 18 years. I hope they get one this time, but it's a crapshoot. And so with regards to the universal health care, of course we should have universal health care. We should be taking care of everybody and improve everybody's living conditions. There's going to be a COVID-19 fund that will be funding, I don't know where the funding's come from, much like the 9/11 fund right now. If you look that up, that was just recently extended to the year 2090 for funerals and medical expenses, etc. So the COVID-19 fund, everybody's going to have to ante up. It's going to be what's going to be best for all concerned and all over the world. So yeah. Hopefully it's used for medical, improve everybody's living conditions, and also to help have better health care.
Well, Susan, thank you for the phone call. So just on that last point here, Assemblyman Bronson, after 9/11, we saw a special fund, especially for first responders to 9/11. We've seen ongoing health problems they've had. We know we are losing a disproportionate number of Americans who work in healthcare on the front lines as nurses and doctors and staff members in these facilities. Some of them may be sick and recover. It's going to take a long time to know that if you get a serious case of COVID and recover, could there be long-term lung damage or other issues? We don't know. Should there be state or federal funding to offer special considerations for those who've worked on the front lines of this crisis, and is that being worked on, Harry?
Yeah, well, first of all, let me thank all of the folks who are in healthcare. You know, they're on the front line. They have been doing an amazing service in helping our loved ones and taking care of them at their own risk. And we know it's at their risk, and that's why we're fighting so hard to make sure that they have the protective equipment that they need. And not only them, but all the other essential personnel that are still out there and making sure that, you know, things keep running as much as we can. I am familiar with the 9/11 fund. When I have worked on the benefits that we have renewed at the state level for people who continue to suffer from lung ailments as well as cancers and things of that nature from 9/11. I'm not aware of any talk about that currently, but my suspicion is indeed we will set something up here in New York State, as well as I expect something to be set up at the federal level to address the long-term situations that may come up. And like you said, Evan, we don't know for sure if there will be long-term conditions that come out of having this virus. But certainly I think we'll step up and we will create some kind of a funding mechanism to help people out.
Assemblyman Johns.
Yeah, well, you know, Evan, or you may not know, or listeners may not know, but I went to St. John Fisher College, got out with a BS degree in biology. I worked in public health for over 30 years. I can guarantee you this. You're not the president of the virus. You're not the governor of the virus. The virus dictates what's going to happen, not some president or members of Congress or whatever. So, you know, we need to work around the realities of what life is. And all this bickering back and forth I don't think is doing us a lot of good. You know, among the other things that I had to do down at the health department were take care of rabies samples. So I'll probably be the only person in elected official in New York State, maybe the country, that's been vaccinated for rabies. Only, not that I've ever been bitten by a rabid animal, but because we had to handle samples. Now, I'm only bringing that up because you know what the cure for rabies is, right? It's death. There is no cure. And if you don't get the vaccine early on, you will wind up being dead within 6 months. So we had to have the prophylaxis, the post-exposure prophylaxis. We had to make sure that people were getting it close to when the bite occurred, if it was a rabid animal, or otherwise the people would succumb to the disease. And there was no politics involved. And that's why I don't particularly care about politics of virus. You're not in charge of the virus. As Dr. Fauci said, you know, the virus is more in charge than we are.
Stephen Henrietta says, Evan, great show. For Assemblyman Johns, I agree that we should save money for a rainy day, but don't you think it was irresponsible for the national GOP to give massive tax cuts to the wealthy, thus exacerbating our already large debt? Not many experts believe that such tax cuts help to reduce debts or stimulate the economy. And also, Democratic presidents tend to be the ones that actually reduce the national deficit, so I would invite budget hawks to join the Democratic Party. That is from Stephen Henrietta. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, Steve's a smart guy, but here's the problem. People conflate raising taxes on the rich, which is okay if you do it at the national level, raising taxes on people that have wealthier incomes. But you can't do it on American business and American corporations. There's a difference there. If somebody makes a lot of money working for or owning a business or a corporation, let them pay their fair share of taxes on their income. But taxing, you know, businesses and corporations, manufacturing, as we've seen, will just go overseas. It will go to other countries. And it's the reason why the governor says he doesn't want to raise taxes at the state level because people will just wind up moving to other states. So we spend more on education than any other state, and yet some of our best and brightest are going down to the Carolinas to work. They go to Florida to retire. And it's not just a coincidence that when everybody was clapping and cheering that Wegmans is going to open up their 100th new store, the new store was down in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Okay, let me continue here with questions from listeners. Dan says, Evan, saying that delivery of care is the same challenge here and in countries with single-payer systems is incomplete. If health care insurance is lost after a job is lost, then the delivery has an extra barrier with access to care. I am a family physician, and I feel that this crisis highlights the need for a single-payer system. Private sector solutions do not help people that are not able to seek them. I'll ask Mark to start, just briefly respond there, and then Harry. Go ahead, Mark Johns.
I believe in universal coverage. So if somebody is a low-income person, let's make sure that they get the same private plan that the members of Congress get. So, plain and simple, I don't think that we need to give Tom Galassano a free health care plan, okay? But if you're low income, let's make sure that you get, number one, you get a voucher to pay for your health care, so everybody is covered. We're covered for health care. We want to be covered for health care insurance. And we could use a variation of a plan I've been talking about, and actually Andrew Yang talked about. Let's make sure that we have a reverse income tax or some way of giving the working poor. And what we found out in this crisis is the working poor are the backbone of this country. Let's make sure that if you're the working poor and you're working on farms, you're working in food production, let's make sure that if you have a low-income job, we're going to, well, as Andrew Yang says, give you $1,000 a month. It's much better than welfare. The check goes out directly to you every month. And it helps your family, so you can use it for food, clothing, shelter, rent, mortgage, whatever.
Assemblyman Bronson.
Yeah, I agree with the caller. Accessibility to health care should not be ended if you lose your job. And, you know, accessibility to healthcare also factors in whether or not it's affordable to pay for that healthcare. And it is less expensive to individuals and to businesses if we have a single-payer system, because of the way the cost of the healthcare system is spread across the entire populace. And it also, there are cost savings that are found through administrative efficiencies if you were to have a single payer. So at the end of the day, the caller is absolutely correct. But the most important point that the caller is raising, and it isn't necessarily the conversation about the funding of the healthcare, but the conversation, if you're going to have a good delivery system, the healthcare system has to be accessible to everyone. And in this current climate, we have found that it's revealed that the cost of healthcare makes it inaccessible to some, especially if they've lost their job.
All right, a lot to work through in our remaining minutes. Let's move fast here. Robert in Fairport on the phone next. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question there. I haven't heard anything about cutting anything in this conversation, and we're in a crisis situation right now. The state honestly doesn't have enough money to pay for anything because the euthanization of business over the past month or so means that there's no revenue coming in, tax revenue as far as business activity. I want two things from each of these people that they're going to cut.
Okay, Robert, thank you. Assemblyman Bronson, two things you're going to cut.
Well, I can talk to you about things that were cut. In the state budget, there were cuts made across the board on many areas. Some of the nonprofits that were funded were not funded, or they were reduced in their funding. The state education, instead of even a cost of living increase in the education system across the state, we didn't do that. We funded them at last year's level. So in essence, that's a cut. And in fact, as Mark pointed out earlier, we used the Title I federal dollars to supplant some of the state funding. So there, the state budget, $177 billion, but there's cuts throughout that state budget. There were cuts in the Medicaid area. And this was, we need to point out, this was done in a time of both a public health crisis as well as an economic crisis. So those were difficult choices that were made, you know, that ended up in cuts or a level funding to last year's budget. What we have to keep in mind, though, is when we're talking about these kind of cuts, that we have an obligation, you know, the state's obligation under the Constitution is the health, safety, and welfare of its citizens. So any cut that we make, we still have to make sure that we take care of the safety, health, and the welfare of our citizens. And that's a very heavy responsibility, but one that we must meet. And so it's easy when you're just talking dollars and cents to say make cuts. It's not as easy when you're saying what cut are we going to make in Medicaid that might ultimately prevent somebody from getting medical health services. So cuts were made and difficult choices were made, but we have to make sure that we fulfill our responsibility as a state.
Assemblyman Johns.
All right, well, I'll give you three. First of all, $420 million a year going to the Hollywood tax credit. And maybe we could dial that back a little bit, right? I don't know that, you know, they would live from New York at Saturday night. I think it's still going to stay there. I'll tell you what, we could have a unicameral legislature. Most people don't think of this, but it would work in New York. Instead of having overlapping districts with the Senate and the Assembly, let's just have 75 districts in the state. We'll call everybody a senator. It's better than 213 Assembly and Senate districts. And we would save $160 million a year. And that's just because we would cut two-thirds of the members and put them into one body. That's what unicameral means. Just have one Senate, 75 members, and everybody would represent their district. You could have nonpartisan elections. You're not going to have overlapping districts. You're not going to have upstate Democrats siding with downstate Democrats or any other party affiliation. Everybody is going to have to represent their district. And if they don't, they'll probably get tossed out of office. We could have two-year budget cycles. Two-year budget cycles would allow schools, nonprofits, and everybody to know what's coming, and we could wind up only being in Albany in the second year, half as much time, saving per diems, mileage, and everything else. And when you go to a unicameral legislature, have only 75 members, you're going to save billions of dollars in retirement for these career politicians and, you know, their health care that we're going to pay for life.
All right, so you got your cuts in. There you go. Robert, I appreciate the phone call. Matthew wants to know if the state's unemployment system's been fixed. And so let me go ahead and read from the New York Times on this. The New York Times piece. Now, this is a two-week-old piece here, and I know a lot's been changing quickly. But the Times reported in early April, thousands of newly employed New Yorkers desperate to stay afloat are frustrated by the state's 1970s-era technology. The state's archaic systems were woefully unprepared for the deluge of claims. End quote. Now, Governor Cuomo says this has been addressed in many ways. Assemblyman Bronson, are you satisfied with how the system is working now?
Sure. I've had conversations with Commissioner Roberta Rudin about this, both right in the beginning. First, people need to realize the exponential increase in the number of claims that are being filed at the state level. The Department of Labor has never faced this level of claims. What the commissioner has done is, with the governor's help, brought in personnel from other agencies to help out at the Department of Labor. They've also interfaced with and had Google come in, and Google has revamped their system and launched a new approach. I think it was a week ago or maybe 2 weeks ago from today. And the feedback that we've gotten has been very positive in that regard. My office is fielding hundreds and hundreds of phone calls and emails and helping constituents out to the best we can. We're making a follow-up to make this happen. We're doing better, but I ask folks, to please put this in perspective. Of the significant increase in calls, be persistent, continue to make the application, but also be patient. The good news is this. This is important. Whether you filed the day that you were laid off or you filed today, the benefits will go back to the date that you last were employed. We have waived the 7-day waiting period, so the benefits kick in immediately from the day you were unemployed. The federal government has authorized and the state has opted in to extend the benefits for, I think it's up to 39 weeks now instead of the 26 week. So just be persistent, be patient, but your benefits will get there.
Okay, Assemblyman Johns, you want to briefly address that as well?
Yeah, Evan, I think for the last few weeks I've been talking to people about their unemployment insurance problems, and I've told people, and they put it out on their Facebook, social media, if you call my office, which is 223-9130, you leave a name and number, I will call you back. And I've called back hundreds of people from my home phone, from the cell phone, now and then from the office. But I call people back, and I try and help them out. And I'm talking about hundreds of people just on unemployment insurance. And I've talked to four or five already this morning. So it's still a problem. I understand we're overwhelmed. You can't have 1 million or 2 million people applying and think it's not going to be overwhelming. But the technology is old. We didn't see this coming. But I always tell people, if you call my office, we'll see what we can do. We have a liaison down there at the Department of Labor. And as Harry said, the governor promised, and we all know, that even if you don't get a check for 2 or 3 or 4 weeks, you will get the back pay. It may take some time, but you're not losing. And I think a lot of people say, oh, I'm losing the money, I'm losing out. You'll actually get it. It's just taking some time, and I wish it was faster.
All right. Against my better judgment, I'm going to ask you to do about 25 seconds apiece because we're going to be out of time. Mark Johns, what's the biggest priority that the state needs to face next right now?
Well, getting through this crisis is the biggest priority, and then getting us on to a healthy pass a healthy, sustainable future.
Okay, Harry Bronson.
Sure. I think that everybody needs to be reminded we're in this together. We're going to get through this together. By helping each other, by supporting each other, together we'll get through the pandemic, and I think we're going to be stronger for it. I think at the state level, our focus has to be on how do we continue to maintain where we're at and help, and from a health standpoint, and then move us into the transition of starting our businesses back up, getting our children back to school, and making sure that we have workforce development programs that will help people who, unfortunately, I think some will not be able to go back to their old jobs. But we'll get through this together with the help and support of each other.
Assemblyman Bronson, always good to have you. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, Evan.
Assemblyman Johns, always nice to have you. Thank you on this Friday afternoon.
Thanks a lot for having me on, Harry, and Harry and Evan both. Take care and be well.
You got it. That's Mark Johns, Harry Bronson, members of the New York State Assembly. It's been a busy week here. We hope you can have a restful and peaceful weekend. Nobody invited the snow for April, but we'll get through that too. And we'll be right back with you on Monday. I want to thank the whole team here. MRA Stein is the intern. Megan Mack is the producer. Rob Braden is the engineer. I'm Evan Dawson. And we do hope you have a good weekend. And we're back with you Monday on member-supported public radio.